You're listening to His Radio Talk, and this is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. To join us, dial 864-977-TALK. That's 864-977-8255. And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us for hour number two. We're glad you're here. Hannah's away today, but this is Tony Beam. I'm the Senior Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier Campus of North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference and where we are training transformational leaders for the church and society. All right, let's get rolling here with hour number two. We're back up on Facebook. Hopefully that'll hold for the rest of the program. Sorry about all of you guys that were on there, because we were having some great conversations, and we got disconnected somehow. Camera got flipped. I mean, it's weird stuff going on. All right, Barry's on the phone, and Barry wants to talk about Syria. So go ahead, Barry.
Good morning, Tony. Tony, didn't the CIA train what's called the Syrian Free Army?
The CIA trained back before the Russians got involved. The CIA was involved.
Exactly.
That was President Bush had the I think even all the way back that far, where the CIA was working with the army. Yeah.
Okay. And didn't the Syrian Free Army go around and kill thousands and thousands of Christians and Yazidis that we trained?
Well, now that
are you aware of that? Are you aware of that?
No, I'm aware. I'm not aware that the Syrian Free Army as a whole did that. There were fighters associated with the Syrian Free Army that were trained by United States officials, the CIA, that were engaged with. I mean, they basically flipped over and started fighting along with Iraqis that were attacking the Yazidis. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't see how we're doing much this, you know, stabilization when you look at Libya, you look at Iraq. I mean, we've been in Iraq for how long? And it looks like now that the Iranians have more influence in Iraq and the Russians and the Chinese with oil than they did before.
Well, they pulled out. We pulled out, Barry. I mean, I just finished listening to General Mattis's book, Call Sign Chaos. And all of the military leaders begged President Obama to leave a force of 18,000 U.S. soldiers in Iraq. And he just refused to do it. I mean, we're going to bring everybody home. Iraq degenerated over time into chaos. You had the rise of ISIS and the whole mess.
But, Tony, before that, way before we pulled out, the Chinese were making headway. And then the Iranians created all kinds of chaos with killing American soldiers, and there was no repercussions for that whatsoever.
Well, that's bad leadership. Wait a minute, Barry. That was bad leadership on the part of President Obama. And I don't think we should follow bad leadership with bad decisions from the same leader about what to do about the situation. Yeah, look, it's complicated. There's a lot of in and outs with international policy. And with the United States, when we go in and we get involved somewhere, I mean, we shouldn't pretend or act like it's going to be a walk in the park, or that we're not going to have to deal with factions from every direction. We do have to do that.
Yeah, but when you're there for 18, 19 years and the outcome hasn't changed, I mean, in Afghanistan or whatever, they're still growing poppy seeds, selling heroin, doing all the same stuff they were doing before. Have you ever listened to General McGregor? Because he sides with Trump, and he says let the situation deteriorate, let them fight it out, because Russia's trying to get an oil pipeline through Syria to the Caspian Sea, and if Turkey gets involved, Turkey's going to want a piece of it. I mean, have you ever heard General McGregor explain it?
I've heard General McGregor explain it, and I take General Mattis over McGregor. I think Mattis was more intricately involved in the Gulf War, in Syria, in Afghanistan, and in Iraq. I mean, he pretty much ran the Marine Corps efforts and all of those, and he ran CENTCOM before he went to be Secretary of Defense. In fact, he had retired from all that. And I just believe that his understanding of the Middle East and American interests is better than McGregor's. And I take him over that.
All righty.
Yeah. Thanks, Barry. I appreciate the call. Look, Syria's not
Get
Syria's
out
not
of here.
Syria's not a great situation. I mean, it's just not. But the Middle East is never. We're never going to walk in there and everybody, you know, start planting flowers and singing, you know, some peace song. I mean, all we're saying is give peace a chance. That's not going to happen in the Middle East. But you know, when you talk about how long we've been in Afghanistan, how long has it been since World War II? We still have American forces in Europe, in Germany. How long has it been since the Korean War? We still have 20,000 soldiers in South Korea to keep South and North Korea apart and to make sure that the gains of the Korean War are not reversed. Can you imagine what would happen? What if we just decided tomorrow? What if the president decides, you know what, we need to, and he said this a couple of times and it never went anywhere, but, you know, what if we just pull all of our American forces out of South Korea? I mean, North and South Korea would be back at war. And we'd say, well, that's their business. That's way over there. That doesn't have anything to do. Listen, folks, if you don't understand the international lines of connection between countries and what it would mean to the United States for there to be open war and chaos in Syria when the Russians are involved and the Iranians are involved and we've got a NATO ally in Turkey that's involved and we've got allies that we depended on to help us to fight against ISIS and to win that battle so that we could stop the caliphate, and now they're being slaughtered and they're turning to the Russians, which are our enemies. We do not want the Russians and the Kurdish fighters to be allied again, because there's going to come a time when we're going to need their help again. I mean, I just don't look. I think it's short-sighted to look at the Middle East and say the best thing we can do is just stay out of the whole thing, because I'm telling you, doing that is going to mean we're going to have to go back in with, I mean, we could have a world war come out of that. And look what was happening in Syria before we made that. The president made this decision, which, look, President Trump has done a lot of good, and I appreciate all the good he's done. But I think this decision was a bad decision, is all I'm saying. You move the United States out of the way, and you give Turkey an opportunity to set off a powder keg when you had relative peace. I mean, you had ISIS was gone. The United States forces were sort of keeping the Turks and the Kurds apart. Yeah, you've got Russia operating in Syria, which is bad, and working with the Iranians, but there's not open conflict. Everybody's kind of gone to their corner, and they're kind of hanging out, and then, boom, you back off and allow the Turks to come in and say, we want a 20-mile safe zone. We want some space between here, and we're going to... And do you think the Turkish army's going to stop there? They're not. I mean, look, Erdogan is an Islamic extremist. Turkey has devolved from a secular state that has been a reliable NATO partner into an Islamist state that is it got expansion on its mind. I mean, that's all right. Rick wants to talk about the state of our political environment.
Good morning.
Hey,
I think I've lived through these policies before of watching this between the Democrats and Republicans, but I think now with these inquisitions, these inquiries that they're doing with the president, this 24/7 slander, I believe that this has come down to a battle of evil. I really think that some of these Democrats, and the way they are being guided by an evil influence, because that, how do you explain all this hatred? It just, to me, seethes with a spiritual influence. And with that, I'll get off the line and let you comment, but I would appreciate hearing your opinion of this Mitt Romney. And thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. Well, thanks, Rick. I appreciate you calling, always. Look, I think Mitt Romney is a traditional Republican who is someone that comes kind of from the old school of Republican thinking. I think Mitt Romney is very concerned about the way that the president conducts foreign policy. I think he disagrees, like I do, with what the president did in Syria. I think Mitt Romney is very reluctant to give the president credit where credit is due. And I think, I mean, I I think Mitt Romney is smart enough to understand he's never going to be president. He's not going to be the guy that Republicans are going to turn to. But I think he has principles and standards that when he sees them violated, and he thinks Trump violates them all the time, that he's going to call out the president over this. I think it's unnecessary. I don't think Romney needs to be doing this. I think right now we need to look. I think we need to be honest, like I'm trying to be today. I don't agree with the president's Syria policy, and I've tried to lay out exactly why. But I've also spent the best part of the first hour of this program laying out to you why I think that this whole impeachment process is a manufactured crisis manufactured by the Democrats to get Trump out of office and to hurt him because they believe they've got a weak feel going into 2020. I mean, look, Nancy Pelosi had an opportunity the other day to call for an impeachment vote, an official vote. She wouldn't do it. And the reason she won't do it is pure politics. Because once you get an impeachment vote, that opens up opportunities for the president to subpoena witnesses. I mean, the president could subpoena the whistleblowers and they have an opportunity to ask questions. And as long as she can keep this thing in the dark, as long as she can keep this so-called impeachment inquiry, nothing more than congressional oversight committees asking questions and interviewing witnesses in the dark, then Democrats have the advantage. And she's protecting vulnerable Democrats in the House for having to vote for an impeachment inquiry. She still doesn't quite have the votes. They've been running around saying that the Democrats have the votes for impeachment, that there ought to be an impeachment vote. Well, there's having the votes when you know you don't have to cast them, and then there's having the votes when the vote comes to the floor. And those two things are sometimes different. And I think Nancy Pelosi knows that, yeah, she's got these Democrats that are willing to say, well, maybe we would vote for impeachment, but when the water hits the wheel, they're not going to do it because they know that they're in a district where it's going to be difficult for them to get reelected if they come against the president with impeachment. And so that's why I said the whole thing is political. And so, Rick, in that regard, I think you're right. Where does Mitt Romney fit in? Romney, like I said, I think he's a traditional Republican. I think Romney has standards that he thinks the president violates, and so he becomes a hypercritical person when it comes to President Trump. And I don't think that's helpful. I think Romney is it shouldn't be doing that. I don't think that. I mean, he has the right to do it as a senator. He can go to the Senate floor and talk about anything he wants to. But I think when he does, he's simply adding to the voices that are trying to undermine the president. And as a sitting U.S. senator, I think that's problematic. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, let me talk a little bit about Senator Graham and the possibility of a letter coming from the Senate to support President Trump, a letter that would go to Nancy Pelosi. We'll be back in just a minute.
Here's your host, Dr. Tony B.
All right, let me wrap up Rick's question because I asked Gary during the break. I said, did I answer that? Did I tell it? And Gary said, well, Rick did ask about the spiritual aspect of it. Look, I believe that there's a spiritual element here? Absolutely. Because the hatred Rick mentioned, the vitriol with which people are talking to each other and talking about the president is definitely, in my opinion, it's demonic. There are those who are just being driven by demonic force against the president. I mean, we saw that there were those that were doing that against Kavanaugh. I mean, when Kavanaugh was in the teeth of the hearing as to whether he was going to get on the Supreme Court or not, we heard and saw things come out about him and his family that were just horrible. And we saw people line up, women lined up to lie about him to try to stop him from getting a Supreme Court seat. And it was given airtime as if it was legitimate. That is evil. There's no other way to put that. Senator Graham put his finger on it. He called it out for what it was. And we see the same thing here with President Trump. This is an all-out assault against the president because of the hatred that they have for him. And by extension, quite frankly, the hatred that's being expressed. I mean, you're hearing on the campaign trail coming from Democrats, progressives, you're hearing them air the fact that they want Christians in this country to be silenced, to be prosecuted, to be rendered without a platform. They don't want people who share a biblical understanding or a biblical worldview to be able to have not only a seat at the table in any kind of cultural debate, but they want us to be completely removed and not allowed to speak. In fact, they would like for everybody that disagrees with them to somehow be muzzled. It's just, it's in the most amazing time in politics that I've ever seen. I mean, William Barr's comments Friday at Notre Dame were prophetic. And I've already talked about them. I'm talking about Friday of a week ago. I read his comments yesterday at the beginning of Vision 2020 just to kind of put into focus why we were having the event, to make people aware of what's out there and how we have to raise our voices. And I appreciate yesterday there was a call, I think it was from maybe it was Senator DeMint. I can't remember who made this call, but there was a request made from the platform for pastors to stand up and to say to their congregations, here is what is right, and this is why we need to follow what is right, and ask our congregations, if we're leading a congregation, to stand for the truth, to be aware that there are people who want to undermine the Christian worldview, and to ask people to be aware of that and to stand for the truth, to be willing to take a stand. And I agree with that. Look, I don't think the pulpit is the place to interject politics in terms of you ought to vote for this person or you ought to vote for that person. But I think the pulpit is now and always has been a place where people of conscience, people who are following Jesus Christ, should be willing to speak to cultural issues that threaten the freedom of believers to associate. And I mean, you think the church ought to be silent when people are calling for the church to lose its tax-exempt status? You think the church ought to be silent when people are calling for Christians who don't agree in whole heart with the LGBTQ agenda that they should be silenced, that educational institutions that are Christian should be removed, that, I mean, you know, it may come to that. I mean, it may all come to us, but we should learn, we should have the resolve to stand against that regardless of the cost. But we don't have to stand against it without pointing out what's happening. We don't have to stand against, we need to be vocal in saying we're going to stay by the truth regardless of the consequences, and that needs to be spoken boldly by pastors, by people in the church. I mean, we can't, you realize, and let me get back to this for a second. You realize during World War II, and prior to World War II, you had courageous leaders in Germany, like Martin Niemöller, like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and others, who were part of a movement in Germany standing against Hitler. And then you had churches in Germany that were actually replacing the cross of Jesus Christ with the Nazi swastika in the churches. Hitler's Cross is a book that you should read that would give you some history and some information about what was going on in the church in Germany prior to World War II. And what I see happening here in America is a church that is under siege. People that are true believers and followers of Jesus Christ are under siege from the culture and from progressives. There's no question that there's a war. You just heard a commentary here from Richard Land a few minutes ago where he was talking about this, that this is no longer something that has been hidden. This is out in the open, that there's open warfare against anybody who is a believer in Jesus Christ and would assert a biblical worldview and agree with what the Bible says about gender and sexuality. And listen, the end goal here is not just to win an issue over sexuality, it's to silence the church on any moral issue and to push. One of the things that really makes progressives angry is that when Christians engage and get involved in the election cycle, it changes the outcome. And they blame, there are a lot of progressives who blame Christians for the fact that Donald Trump is president of the United States. And so they want to undermine not only the truth of God's word, but they want to come after the people who believe in that truth and to stop them from being able to engage in the political arena and in the culture. And they'll mock us. They'll make fun of us. We need to understand that this is going on. So is there a spiritual component? You better believe there's a spiritual component. Absolutely. And we need to pray. I mean, how do you do battle when you're up against spiritual forces? You have to fight on your knees. That's the only in the spiritual realm or the where these battles take place, we have to pray. I mean, the Bible tells us in Ephesians that we're up against principalities and powers and the rulers of the darkness of this present age, and they're trying to push an agenda forward that is to undermine the testimony of Jesus Christ in the church and anybody that follows him. And we have to be willing to take a stand, a strong stand. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back. We're going to talk to Bill. He wants to talk about Elijah Cummings, and I appreciate that because I had that on the list, and I just haven't gotten to it yet. But Elijah Cummings passed away, I think it was either yesterday or the day before, maybe yesterday. And I'm certainly, we need to acknowledge that and talk about it a little bit. We'll do that when we return.
And here's the host of Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. Here's Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back to the program. Bill, I appreciate you calling in to talk about Representative Elijah Cummings because whereas Elijah Cummings and I would probably not agree on much, he had a stellar career as a leader in the United States Congress and was respected by very, very many of his colleagues. So I appreciate you calling in about it.
A very good morning to you, Dr. Bean, and I really want to congratulate you and all the others who bring those who are followers of the way together and believe and stand up for what you believe in a nonviolent way. And so I commend you all for what you did yesterday. I was so glad to hear it went well for you. And that is in the very tone of the late Congressman Cummings. He was born, I believe. I know his parents were. He was from Clarendon County, South Carolina. His parents were very involved in the Briggs versus Elliott case, and which was the first federal case to reach the courts for desegregation of our schools. And he had a great spirit. And I appreciate what you said, because he was one Democrat that, you know, he would stand up for what he believed. And then if you had something that he only believed 5% of the 100%, he would support you on that 500%. He reached across the lines. And I tell this story. I heard it from Congressman Cliburn. He met it years ago, and he repeated it the other day. He was diagnosed as and put into slow class. And this was done by a teacher of color. And another teacher, a year or so later, said, no, he doesn't deserve to be in that class. And got him out, and he graduated from law school, I think, at Phi Beta Kappa. So he was a good man, fought for what he believed, but would work across the aisles. And that shows you that the kind of people who are born in the Palmetto State, regardless of what color they may be and how big or tall they might be. South Carolina has produced some great people, and as a son of the South and of the Commonwealth of Virginia, it's just an honor for me to have been living here and learned about so many great people of all colors. And if you get a chance sometime, you need to study that story of Presbyterian College and how they named a hall after a black lady that washed the clothes and walked the cross and on after her. So South Carolina is a great state.
Yeah, no question.
We haven't been a perfect state, but no state have, and none of us have. But we got to give honor to those who work in harmony as Christ would want us to be. And I thank you for that.
Sure, Bill. Thanks. Yes, sir. I appreciate you calling. I do. I join you in saying that we need to pray for Elijah Cummings' family. We need to honor the fact that he gave his life in service to the country and serving in the United States House of Representatives. He was part of the civil rights movement. Like I said, people that I disagree with, Trey Gowdy made this point yesterday via video at the Vision 2020 event. People that we disagree with, we need to learn how to hear them, to enter into conversations with them in a way that reflects the fact that we're not against them because of who they are. We just don't agree with their ideas. And we can't ever make progress if we're yelling at each other, angry at each other. We have to get to a point where we get to know people and then try to influence them with the rightness of our ideas. You know, if our ideas and what we believe in is right, and I believe conservatism is right, and I recommend to you wholeheartedly Senator DeMint's new book, Conservative, Knowing What to Keep, because he talked about it yesterday and basically went through his book. And he's right that we have truth, and we have biblical principles, and we have right thinking, and we have years of history demonstrating that capitalism and conservatism and the ideas and principles that support capitalism and conservatism have been good for people. Yes, are there pitfalls and dangers? You bet. I mean, with capitalism, the problem is greed. I mean, you have to have something to keep greed in check, or you'll have people take advantage of other people in a free capitalistic society. But what keeps us in check is our understanding of Christian principles that we apply and we bring to the table to push back against greed. And we put checks and balances in place to keep our economy moving forward so that everybody benefits. And, you know, but in order for us to make our arguments, we have to create an atmosphere, as much as it depends on us, of being able to have discussions with people and to be able to agree to disagree about things and yet not write people off. I think that's the Christians do not have the luxury or the permission to write anybody off who is made in the image of God. I mean, we should be peacemakers. We should be people who compromise our principles for the sake of peace, but as much as it depends on us, we try to live at peace with people and to step into the political debate with the truth and with a sense of grace and humility, not with anger or pride or any of those things that, you know, are just ugly when they get inserted into the political debate. All right, let's quickly do celebrity birthdays, because we haven't done that today, and I want to keep us on schedule with that. If you're having a birthday today, happy birthday to you. You're a celebrity on your birthday, so we say this to you.
Happy birthday!
Yep, you share a celebrity birthday with a pretty good crop of celebrities today. Chuck Berry was born today in 1926. You know, he had his cousin Marvin Berry. Back to the Future reference. George C. Scott, who, in my opinion, Patton's one of the best movies, biography movies of all time. He was born in 1927. Peter Boyle was born in 1935. You probably remember him from Young Frankenstein and Everybody Loves Raymond. Mike Ditka is 80 years old today. Lee Harvey Oswald was born today in 1939. Pam Dauber from Mork and Mindy. I'll let you guess which one she is. Anyway, she's 68 today. Martina Navratilova is 63, one of the greatest female tennis players of all time. Jean-Claude Van Damme is 59. And Aaron Morin of Happy Days was born today in 1960. And she passed away a few years ago, very tragically. Had a last years of her life were spent just destitute. It was a very sad story about her. She had, after Happy Days, she said she did Joni Loves Chachi, which was on for, what, maybe 2 years, two seasons. And then after that, she kind of disappeared and was, you know, things didn't go well for her. So anyway, all right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll, I'm just going to go ahead. I don't have time to get into another subject here. So we'll try to make the last segment a little bit longer. And we'll talk about this letter that Senator Graham wants Republicans to sign. And we got another story on the table. Stay with us.
Here's the host of Christian Worldview. It's Dr. Tony B.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for listening to the show today. I got to tell you, I was listening to what we just heard, and I, you know, I'm just saying that the expiration date on a carton of milk or on a container of milk, plastic jug, whatever it's on, as far as I'm concerned, that's under only the Bible in terms of its infallibility. That God's word is completely infallible, but right under that is the infallibility of the expiration date on a carton of milk. I get the same thing in my house sometimes. We hit that expiration date, and it's like, well, smell it before you. Nope, it's going in the trash, going down the sink. I believe those people that understand when milk went in that carton know exactly when it's gonna. Because I've done that before. I fell for that one time. Okay, smell it, and I thought I was gonna retch. So I'm just saying, I treat that with all seriousness.
Jerry Seinfeld does a routine about that.
Oh, really?
About how they get the date, and he says that he thinks it's the cows. The cows know. They know. And so while they're milking, the cow looks back and says,
November 10th.
Yeah.
Well, whoever knows, I trust what's printed on there, and I'm not going beyond that. All right. And the same thing with leftovers, okay? I know you put it in the refrigerator. I'm a 3 day man. Okay. I'll give you 3 days in the fridge. On day four, it goes in the trash. Well, no, it's probably still no. After 3 days, it's out of there. All right. Senator Graham, according to, this is a story that I'm telling you about from the Washington Examiner. And, it says that Senator Graham is asking Republican senators to sign a letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi declaring President Trump's phone call with Ukraine's president is not an impeachable offense. So he's limiting it to just saying this is not impeachable. What he's wanting to do is communicate to Nancy Pelosi that if you impeach the president over this phone call, we've already decided, well, all the evidence that's on the table, this is not an impeachable offense. Now, this could backfire big time to me on the president. And what this sounds like to me, this is speculation. I always try to lay out when I'm speculating. So I'm speculating right now. This sounds like President Trump said to Senator Graham, I want a letter. I want a letter from the Senate. What are you guys doing over there? You're just sitting there. I mean, I'm getting beat up every day in the press. You guys are sitting over here. What are you doing? You're not doing anything. Write me a letter. Get all these guys to sign a letter and tell them that you're not going to vote for impeachment so that maybe this thing can just go away. I don't know that conversation took place, but I wouldn't be surprised. And by the way, am I criticizing the president if he said that to Senator Graham? Absolutely not, because I understand what if I was in the White House and it was me, I'd probably be going over to the Senate. And so are you guys going to just sit there and let this happen? I mean, what are you doing? And I think some of them are a lot of senators are afraid that there's another shoe that's going to drop, and they don't want to get out there on television and be all wrapped up. I mean, Senator Graham is one of the few that's willing to get out there and wholeheartedly support President Trump in this. But he always uses the qualifier, I mean, which I think is smart, what we know now. Because we do. The information, and there's a lot of it out there, There's a lot of information that we already have about this, and there's nothing that suggests that the president did anything to be impeached over. Nothing. And so this could be a good thing, but here's how it could be really bad, is that you only get about 20 senators to sign on. I mean, if every Republican senator, except for, you know, the usual suspects, you're probably not going to get Romney, you're not going to get Ron, maybe not Rand Paul, I don't know. You're not going to get Murkowski, you're not going to get Collins. Collins is in a life and death struggle in Maine over whether she's going to get reelected or not. And mainly because she stood up for Kavanaugh. And the people of Maine, I mean, people who are conservatives in Maine, Susan Collins deserves another trip to the Senate just because of what she did with Kavanaugh. I mean, she weighed that and landed on the right side. But in any event, I mean, you're going to have some they're not going to sign. If you get, except for three or four usual suspects, you get a letter signed by all the Republicans. Yes, that's because it's going to take, let's see, how many Republicans? It'd take about 20 Republicans to defect in order for the president to be removed from office. So if you get 30 or 40 Republicans signing on from the Senate, a letter saying, excuse me, I don't know what happened there.
Weather's changing. Is that what it is?
That's what it is.
Just some changing weather. Well, whatever that was, it's still kind of down there. So we'll do the best we can. But if you get 40 Republicans saying this, then that's going to have an impact. And the news is going to cover that, and that's going to be a positive for Trump, because what people are going to have to do is go on CNN and MSNBC and Fox News and all of it, and they're going to have to say there's not support in the Senate for an impeachment. And President Trump can come out and tout that. But you get 20 senators, and then that's going to be the story. The story is going to be that the president doesn't have the support in the Senate that he's going to need, and that's not going to help him. So I hope that Senator Graham has got some kind of mechanism in place, this kind of a cutoff, where they're going to count noses before they actually put this into place. Because they don't, it really could be a negative for the president. All right, there's an interesting piece today by Mark Thiessen. And he's writing about the three polls that have come out showing that Elizabeth Warren is in the lead, that she's now going to be the one to beat, that Joe Biden has faded. There's another poll, a couple of polls that says Biden still has a 10-point lead. But a lot of the insider talk and the Democrat Party is the ascension of Warren, and that Joe Biden is hemorrhaging support. He's had his high water mark, and that Warren is going to overtake him. I have no idea. I think that's possible. I think it's also possible that Biden's support among African Americans is solid and is strong enough to carry him, even if some of the other support abandons him. So here's the interesting part of Thiessen's story today at Fox News. A Marist poll asked voters whether the economy is working well for you personally. That was the question. Because Elizabeth Warren's main attack against President Trump and on the economy is that the economy is working for the rich. The economy is good for the wealthy. The economy is helping business owners and people who are the super rich. But it's leaving middle class America behind. Well, in a question asked by the Marist poll, is the economy working well for you personally? Two-thirds of Americans said yes. And that includes large majorities in almost every demographic group. 67% of college graduates, 64% of those without a college education, say the economy is working for them. So do 68% of whites and 61% of non-whites. So what that says is that the economy, as it is a big winner for the president. And for Elizabeth Warren to be out there making the case that the economy's not working for regular people, I got news for you. First of all, rich people are regular people. They're people who have happened to be successful.
and they have the wherewithal to provide jobs for everybody else. And this idea of this class warfare and saying that normal people are being left behind by this economy is a myth. People know that the economy that we currently have is good for them. I mean, how could it be anything? We've got the lowest unemployment since the 1960s, down at 3.5%. We've got low unemployment among Hispanics, women, blacks. I mean, all historic lows in terms of work opportunities. And if anybody else was president, if you had a progressive in the White House, this would be front page news at the New York Times every day and at the Washington Post. CNN would be touting it. MSNBC, I mean, it would be incessantly people being interviewed. How good has the economy been for you? Here's a man in the street interview. How good is your business operating? How much of a benefit have you had from the president's economic policies? I mean, all of that's out there. It's just that nobody's talking about it. Carol wants to talk about impeachment. Carol, go ahead.
Yeah, the way I would like to tell the Democrats, the way you remove a sitting president is you run on your policies and you get the people to get out and vote for you. You don't impeach people. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Carol. I appreciate that. I agree. I think that, you know, we've got a political solution to the president of the United States coming up in just over a year, or actually, yeah, just over a year from now. Voters will go to the polls and make a decision. And that's where constitutionally this question is supposed to rest, unless there's some compelling reason to remove the president. I don't think the American people think that reason exists.
I was going to say something that it's interesting what Carol just said, because I see the polls and the news thing saying more people say he should be impeached or removed from office. And I'm thinking, but the people that I hear talking that bring this stuff up, and yeah, I don't really even encourage it, they just say it, they sound like Carol. Yeah. They sound like, I'm tired of this. It's ridiculous.
You and I are kind of in a conservative bubble somewhat.
That's
because
true.
Our friends and acquaintances and the people we're engaged with every day,
South Carolina,
are more likely to think like us. And there are a lot of people in South Carolina that would be in favor of impeachment. So I'm not saying that that's not true. But I do think the polls are skewed at this point. You're not going to convince me that 54% of the American people think that Donald Trump should be removed from office, impeached and removed from office. I just don't believe that. Now, we know that the Fox News poll was skewed toward Democrats, which surprises me, but we know that it was. All right, before we wrap up here, I wanted to just mention the president had a big rally in Dallas yesterday. This is just a few hours after former Texas Governor Rick Perry announced that he's going to step aside. Of course, the Democrats are coming after him as energy secretary. And Perry's just, you know, look, I don't need this. I'm just going to go ahead and resign. And it's not unusual as you go head toward an election for a second term for a president, the cabinet members begin to shuffle. And so this would be part of that. But the president had a crowd last night of about 30,000 people at the American Airlines Center. And another big group watched it on a screen. So just an amazing rally for the president last night. His support is solid in Texas. Have a good weekend.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Talk, His Radio Network, or the Radio Training Network.